everyone, Brett Henderson here, excited to have another episode of the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass. Today is a first for me. This is exciting. Our guest is Lacey Langford. She is a fellow veteran and podcaster. So this is my first time having another podcaster on here, so I'm a little nervous. She has a lot more experience than I do. I'm still a rookie compared to her, but hopefully I can work at her level. Let's talk about that. Lacey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. And Giselle, good morning. How are you? I know you're on mute right now. And Giselle kind of, she makes sure everything's great and she has a great smile. So
yes, I'm much behind better the look scenes.
At than me. No, she is the scene. She's the scene. My mustache scares everyone else away. So we have to keep her here for balance. So how you doing, Giselle? You good?
I'm good.
All right. So Lacey, well, we got several things we can chat about today. So first things first, to let our audience know, we're going to go just kind of give us your background and how you kind of got into the military world, so to speak, and your own little journey, and we'll go from there. You mind just sharing?
No, not at all. I grew up Army, so that's really where it all started. My dad was a military police officer, and he was in for 20 years. I decided after high school that I really wasn't ready for college, and I wanted to start working. I thought the military would be a great thing for me. I tried to join the Army, but my dad was like, hey, let's just talk to the Air Force recruiter, see what he has to say. And once I did that, I was like,
why?
Oh. I was like, all right, we'll do Air Force. So I enlisted in the Air Force, and that's where I met my husband. And we got married actually right after I left the military. So I think I've only gone 1 year of my life without an ID card, which is my claim to fame. And along the way, I grew up in a household where we were taught to spend less than we make and save our money. And that's something I wanted to pursue more. While I was on active duty, I started back to school, and then after started pursuing a degree in business and finance to kind of take those lessons I had learned to the next level. But the problem was I rolled right into being a military spouse, and with that came some un and underemployment challenges. It's very difficult. At that point, my husband had taken a commission as an infantry officer, and it was very difficult for me to build my career around his infantry career. 1 year home, 1 year deployed. It wasn't a good schedule. And the year he was gone home, he was gone half that time for, you know, training and stuff. So I decided to start a business out of frustration from being a military spouse. And that's really, if things have evolved over time in my business and my career, but that's really how it all got started. I grew up in the military. My family is all military. My siblings are still on active duty, two of them. And that's how it all began.
Awesome. And how long were you actually in the Air Force?
I was in for 4 years.
4 years. And then you came out, went to college, whatnot. So when did you have the inkling from coming out of the Air Force and trying to figure out and supporting your husband and his lifestyle to, hey, I want to try my own gig? Were you kind of working for some other companies first to, like, I guess, when was the first glimmer of entrepreneurship where you're like, I want to do something on my own?
Well, I can honestly say I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. It wasn't something that I ever set out to do. It was really one day I just got really pissed off about my career, not being able to build it around what the military had planned for us. And so I wanted to take control of my ability to earn and to develop my own career. And that's really how it started. And it was after doing a lot of volunteer work, which I love very much. But at some point, you want to earn an income for your family, increase your quality of life. And so that is ultimately why I started into entrepreneurship, not because it was something I had a deep passion for. It's because it was something out of necessity. If I wanted to have something stable and I had control over, it meant that I had to do that on my own. And, you know, looking back, it was a lot more work than I had realized I was ever going to get into. But I'm glad that I did it looking back, but it's been challenging.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. And I think you hit on something. A lot of people want to start their own business, or they have an idea or they have a thought. However, they're comfortable, right? You have a W-2 job, you're working for a big name corporation, and you have aspirations, but you're okay. And it's like, do I really want to rock the boat? And I'm doing okay. I got decent wages, a decent lifestyle. I have a decent car, I have a little house or apartment, and I'm doing okay. I want to do it, but do I want to be uncomfortable? Then all of a sudden, whack, it's the whack. You have that epiphany or something happens or some sort of event. You're like, F this, I'm done. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to own it. And you actually go, it's a horseshoe. You actually go down first because you have the stability, you have the income, you have the lifestyle, and then you start your own. You don't know what you don't know, and ignorance is bliss. And then you start getting kicked in the face and kicked in the face and kicked in the face. You're going down, 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 learn, learn, learn. And then all of a sudden, okay, I'm at rock bottom. Like, this sucks. But then you, all your hard work and your lessons learned start to pay off and you start coming out of the trough, right? And then you get back to where you were. And hopefully you start moving above and beyond where you were. So what was that journey like for you?
Well, I had a huge safety net. I have the benefit of my husband's full-time income as an infantry officer. So that to me was something also that helped greatly. A lot of people don't have that benefit or that resource to start their business. And like you said, you're definitely going to take a hit in quality of life and also a hit in the time that you have that's free, all of those things. But I was lucky enough financially to have the support of my husband's career in order to start building my business where it wasn't as detrimental to not bringing in as much money as possible because there was still a roof over my head and food on the table.
That's huge. That's a huge differentiator. Let me ask you this question. Do you feel that potentially slowed you down, that safety net, because you could ease into it? It wasn't, where is my next meal coming from? I must get this deal done or I can't survive. Do you feel at all having that safety net hindered you or slowed down your momentum at all?
No, I think it was being a full-time mom that really slowed me down. I didn't have the free time to be spending all on my business. It was really in the middle of the night during nap time, those preschool hours when I was able to build my business. So I don't think it was necessarily financial that hindered me. Now, of course, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't have gone into entrepreneurship if it meant that I wasn't going to have a meal or provide for my children. I probably would have had a side hustle or some type of other income coming in while I built my business. And really, that's what I did in the beginning. Besides, you know, being a financial coach and creating my coaching business, I still did freelance writing work in order to make money. I did consulting. I, you know, wrote blog articles for my own website where maybe they were sponsored or something like that. So I definitely wasn't solely on my coaching income in the beginning. It really was, even within my business, a side hustle.
Makes sense. I'm glad to see you pull that all together. So it's probably a natural evolution from writing this. And you keep going in that direction. Maybe you weren't 100% certain what it was ultimately going to look like. Is that a true statement?
Yes.
And so when did you, in your mind, feel like, bam, this is working and I feel okay and I love where this is going? Or have you had that feeling yet?
I don't know that I've had like a kind of made it or I've, you know, done all of these things. I will say, I've started to feel things get a little bit easier. So I didn't have to hustle so much for that opportunity because that's really ultimately everything that in building a business, you're hustling for every single thing that you have, you know, every connection, every money making opportunity, the thing that you're selling, the service that you're selling, you're hustling for that. And so I feel like sometimes now it's like, okay, wait a minute. That was really awesome that all of this groundwork that I've laid down over the years have created opportunities for me that may not feel like it's a lot of work now, but really, I mean, it was years of work to get that opportunity.
Now, I think you hit the nail on the head, and I will share, and for our audience who's listening too, and this is something Giselle and I go back and forth with sometimes, is when you work your hustle to find a client or an opportunity, and I work with individuals as well as corporations, and it's taking me sometimes years to build that relationship, to earn their trust, to earn their confidence where they like, trust, respect me and are willing to work with me. And then we bring in a vendor to service them for different areas. And that vendor, the service rep, is a person that got a job, got hired, and is given the client that I work so hard to build that relationship, to get to know them, to understand their pain, to see their challenges, to provide massive value, or else why would they engage me? And then I sense and see the indifference. It's just another client, just another check in the box, another work. It's work for them. They're given a client load of 40, 60, 80, sometimes 100 companies to work with, 100 clients to work with. And it's just a number for them. But that number is a deep relationship for me. And so when I see poor service come from a vendor, I take it personally as a slap in the face against all the hard work I've done for years to build and grow that relationship, because that is a relationship, and the money that comes in from that relationship is the direct fruit of all my work and effort and labor over the years. And so when I see a vendor, and it's understandable, they're given a client load, it's just work to do, and they're paid for 40 hours and they have to get it done. It's checking the box and just get it done. But the vendors don't understand or don't always take a step back to realize the work that's been done to build the level or the, their book of clientele to service, right? So that's something I see all the time. And some, I don't mind saying, I'm a straight shooter and direct. And so when I see poor service, I'm pretty stern and forward with our vendors. And I'm known for that. It's my reputation. However, but it's personal because when you provide bad service to my clients, you're jeopardizing my relationship. And I will not allow you to do that. I will have you removed if you're going to jeopardize my relationship with my clients that I've worked so hard to attain. So just when you are sharing your piece, it just is triggering things in my mind. At the same time, it's about communication, right? And so communicating with your vendor. So the vendor understands what this relationship really means. It's not just a check in the box, not a number. Most clients or customers are giving a number and you literally are just a number. And even today, Giselle and I were working on one servicing one of our clients. Hey, here's this issue. I gave him the name and the vendor comes back. What's the number? And it just shows it's just a number to you. You should know all of your advisors, clients by name. So when I say, hey, here's my client, here's the name. Oh, I know that client by name, not their number. And so it's just a relationship and way of running a business. So a bit of a tangent there, and Giselle always yells at me, I go on tangents, so this is your podcast, not mine, but we're in the same space. So this is kind of fun for me because you're also a peer and I'm in a safe place. So a lot of people would say we're competitors. Why would you have a competitor on? No, we're in the same place and there's so many different views and you're a woman and I'm a man. There's different perspectives about that. So thank you again. I'm going to shut up and come back to you. So let's talk about your business now and what you're doing to help veterans now.
So I have a coaching business, but predominantly all of the work that I do, actually all the coaching I do now at this point is pro bono. I, along the way, was very uncomfortable with charging service members and their families to help them with money, but I wanted to make money because I worked very hard to get my education and experience, and I wanted to increase my quality of life. And so along the way, another thing just happened. Like I got really ticked off and I was like, this isn't working. I'm going to continue to just be like, all right, you don't have to pay me. And it's basically volunteer work. I mean, if you're not making money in a business, it is volunteer work. It's not a business. And so I came up with the idea that I would get a third party to pay me to do the work that I do. I go to brands and companies and let them know the projects that I'm working on and see if they'd like to help support me to help the mission that I'm working on. And then that's also why I created my podcast. I wanted to be able to help more people and reach more people and creating a podcast to talk about topics that are impacting the military community to help them make, save, and invest money wisely is everything the Military Money Show is about. And that was another way to earn income, but also help more people. And so it just evolved, but those are the big work that I have been doing. And then a recent transition in my business is, you know, you see a problem and you're either going to be part of the problem or you're going to be a solution. And for me, it was the military money community not coming together and engaging with each other. I'm very blessed to get to talk to a lot of people and a lot of companies and the work that I do. And I hear wonderful work that people are doing, things that they're trying to fix, problems that they're seeing early on. But then I started to see people didn't know about each other. They weren't communicating. There's all these ways to make money. I also struggled with mentorship. While I was in school after active duty, I was a non-traditional student. I had already served and I needed somebody to kind of explain the playing field in finance for me so I could understand the positions to see which one I wanted to play. And so there was this lacking mentorship in our community. And what I ended up doing was starting a conference called Mil Money Con, in order to start getting people together, start talking, to learn solutions other people are using, to maybe get on, understand trends that are happening before they get out of hand, like buy now, pay later or something. And really just be able to help each other. Rising tides lift all ship. That is the foundation of the military community. And that applies to financial professionals. And, you know, the stronger we are, the more that we can help the military community. We may not be tip of the spear, but we can help sharpen the blade.
I think that's great and very well said. And I'm actually happy that we're having this discussion because for me, a lot of vets that reach out to me are more at that level. They're kind of coming out. They're trying to figure it out and a lot don't have money and they're trying to figure out which way to go. And for me, I humbly don't mind sharing. I'm like, look, I help you once you've made it. And once you've made some, you make more. That's where I come in. I'm not doing, we will educate. We will talk about benefits of a Roth IRA, getting something going, something simple. But normally for me, I'm working with executives already. They've been out for 10, 20 years. They've built a business, or they came out of the military as a field grade officer, and then they've moved over into corporate America, and they're having success there in leadership, and they're then stepping into leadership roles in corporate America, and they're trying to, how do I make the company better? You know, and so that's kind of where I play and work with the corporate, the C-suite versus the brand new staff. However, we're going out this afternoon. We have a client, and it's a public entity. However, it's run by a lot of veterans. I'll just say that. And so, but their staff wants help. And so I run 401k. So investing 101. It's interesting for me. Everyone wants advice and guidance, and they just want you to show up and give it to them. Like, well, you can't. It's just like you go to the doctor. You're not going to the doctor's office. Doctor, I got a pain. Oh yeah, here's a drug. Well, that happened in the 90s. I think those doctors are all gone now for giving Quaaludes and other weird things. But you got to have a full physical. You have to understand where you are, what your needs are, what ailments you have, and then can we treat those ailments? The same thing with financial planning. It takes time. It takes time to truly understand where someone is. Let them, a lot of times they don't even know where they are, right? And so a lot of the work we do is helping people figure out who they are and where they are today, let alone where you want to go. Like, no one wants a financial plan. Have you ever seen, oh, I'm excited, can I have a financial plan with you? No one ever wants a financial plan. However, everyone wants to be financially independent. So you start with that. What do you need to do to be financially independent? Okay, need a plan. Well, how do we get you there? That's all the planning process. So what part of that process do you feel you enjoy doing the most? Like, what's when you wake up and you're engaged in your business and you're working with your clients or putting together your content? What do you personally enjoy the most?
I think when I hear that I made a difference in the quality of life of an individual or their families, that's really, it doesn't matter how much money you have or how little you have. If your quality of life or something is stressing you, all the money in the world really doesn't matter. If it's something that you might be very successful, but you're getting ready to get divorced and you need to understand your finances through the divorce process, or if you're in debt and you don't understand how to get out of debt, if you are trying to start your life with your new spouse and you don't understand how to start saving for your retirement, understand the blended retirement system, those type of things. So to me, it's very basic, is that, you know, having a positive impact to somebody, the knowledge that I have that I can share to make it so somebody is not as stressed or feel that they have something now to help them cope, a tool or a resource. That to me is, you know, what it's all about.
No, I think it has to be altruistic in nature. It can't just be about money. And same thing for me when we go out, and even Giselle seeing when she comes out. And just like you said, for me, you see someone here, they start down here and they finish here. And after our interaction, that is rewarding to me. Seeing someone there, one space, you engage with them, you help them, and they're in a better place. That's rewarding. That's where I come back after meetings with Giselle. I'm like, it just feels good when the team appreciates what you do. And so that's the high, so to speak, is actually helping people and giving back. And then the value comes in when you're compensated for it. It's even better, right? So I love that. So with your podcast, I'm going to let you plug yourself a little bit here. Tell us the name one more time of your podcast and where it's located.
My podcast is The Military Money Show. You can find it anywhere podcasts are at, or at LaceyLangford.com/podcast. You can listen there and download, but it's everything to help the military community make, save, and invest money wisely. And, you know, we're coming up on, I think, 218 episodes.
Wow. That's impressive. Do you have one episode or a recent experience that jumps out? Oh yeah, this was a really good one, or the one that you think veterans would appreciate the most that are listening right now.
I've had some really good ones. It's really hard to decide on what would be kind of one that's top of mind. Some of my favorites, though, every year for my birthday, I do a special show where I get to do whatever I want. And I've interviewed my family members, to include my 96-year-old grandmother, to, you know, record history and money, that the way it was back then, what they did. I mean, debt wasn't a thing. You know, you didn't borrow money. You kind of made do with what you had. So those are important to me. But also, I've had some shows where, you know, talking about how to become a happy retiree. You know, all the work that you're doing right now is for the future. I always say that you're in your earning years, you're really making and saving money for two people, for yourself and your 80-year-old self. And if you are not spending less than you make and putting it away for the future, you're not going to have the quality of life that you want when you're 80. So some of the shows talking about how to really lay down that groundwork right now to, in order to have a better quality of life and better future, I think are really important. And then subjects like survivor benefit plan, that's really important. SGLI, things that are really important in our community to understand because it has a financial impact on you, whether you know it or not. So those are some of my faves.
Hey, let's go granular for a little bit. Let's talk about SGLI and then the survivor benefit. Is that what you said? Survivor benefit? What are those?
Well, the SGLI is a service members group life insurance and the SBP is a survivor benefit plan. That's something when you retire from the military, you have to make the choice if you are going to elect that. So that if in the event of the service member's death, the spouse receives their pension, even after their death, it's at a reduced amount. And that's a decision that military spouses have to sign off whether for or against when the service member retires. And that's a big decision that people face. And sometimes people think, well, I, you know, could take that money, the difference, because you're going to get less money each month while the service member is alive in order to have that after their death. Some people say, well, I can get an IRA or some other type of investment instead of doing that. But I think, you know, it's a very personal decision. I think a lot of people don't prepare for it enough, just like getting out of the military. You should be working on that sucker 2 years in advance, at least before you separate or retire. And the decision for the SBP is something that is a calculation that's going to be very personal. It's also going to have to do with the ages of the spouse, other finances that you have. So but that's a really important decision. And the SGLI, you know, that's your insurance while you're on active duty in the event of your death, but it also comes with, you know, you can get the family SGLI. And then as a veteran, you can get the VGLI, which is the Veterans Group Life Insurance. That's something you have to make the decision when you separate or get out or retire. But all of those things play into, you know, financial security. If you've worked really hard and done all the things you're supposed to be doing, you know, staying out of debt, saving for your retirement, their insurance to protect what you've built. And it's something that people should give consideration to.
Just a question there about the VGLI. I saw something last week and actually one of my clients who's also a veteran brought it to my attention, but I think it's only $40,000. Is that correct? Are we thinking about the same thing or is that something different?
There's different amounts. I'm not sure all of the different amounts. It's what you elect, but okay. And it's expensive because if you think, you know, you're not taking a medical exam to receive that insurance and it increases as your age does the price of it. So for some people, it's not a good fit versus, you know, if you got a term life insurance policy while you're on active duty. If you're, you know, getting near the 40 year old range, you might want to start looking at, you know, getting term life insurance because the older you get, you know, if you have more ailments, things like that, it's going to be more each month to get that term life insurance.
Do you help are they clients of yours or are they just, this is your altruistic mission where you're just giving advice and guidance for free on the webcast to you or your podcast, excuse me. Do you help someone say, you know, you got one veteran, only did four and out, so there's no retirement. And so there's no pension versus veterans that have Social Security and that worked in corporate America and they're trying to figure that out. Or they have a combination. Do you help with that lifestyle decision-making tree? Is figuring out like the difference between Social Security versus a pension and when you can take it, when you can't take it. Do you do all that kind of work? Or what do you – I'm just trying to help me see what you do. If I'm a couple and I come to you and maybe couple one is as a veteran, four and out, I'm trying to figure it out in corporate America now and the military is part of me. It's not all of me, just a part of me. And the further along I go, it's more in the past versus the veteran who did 20, 25 years, right? It was institutionalized and is finding themselves again as they come out and they reacclimate to corporate America.
Most of the people that I help are on active duty and they may be getting out.
Okay.
For me, it's meeting the client where they're at. So mostly I work in the capacity as a financial coach. So a financial coach is helping somebody get where they want to be. I don't go to the gym and be like, I'm going to need you to do those pushups for me to my trainer. They know how to do pushups. They're trying to show me the right techniques. So I'm helping people get to where they want to be and educating them, showing them, you know, understanding what a 401k is, what, you know, HR packet you're going to get when you get out and start this new job. Sometimes I do deal with people in crisis, you know, so I'm working more in a counseling capacity where somebody's going to lose their car, they're going to lose their home, they don't have food on the table, maybe they're going through an abusive situation financially, and so I'm helping them get the resources and actually do that work for them. They don't know how to do a budget. I'm probably going to do a budget for them because it's emergency. You know, we got to figure out what you have coming in, what you have going out real quick. And then in the advising space as a financial planner, I do not work in that capacity. So if it's something where somebody wants, let's say, the SBP calculation, I'm going to refer them to a financial advisor that specializes in the military community for them to help them do that calculation.
Okay. So you're a coach, not an actual advisor planner.
Correct.
So are you registered or licensed in any
nope.
capacity? Okay. So it's your mentor.
I am an accredited financial counselor and I have a CFP okay. background. So if I ever pass the exam, I will be a certified financial planner, but that's a whole nother story. So I do have education and an accreditation in finance, but I work as a financial coach.
Oh, I like that. So it's different. And I like that because I came through the trenches at Merrill Lynch and UBS where it's your financial advisor, but you're a money gatherer. And your only job is to go get money and bring it in. They sell it under the guise when you're, I have to say firm. So not naming names. However, large institutions, financial institutions, they make their money managing money. And their goal is to have a sales force that goes out and just brings in assets, brings in dollars. And the more dollars they bring in, the more they can charge, the more revenue they make, the more profitable they are, the more they pay shareholders, the more they pay their managers, the more they can afford brick and mortar and nice fancy buildings on nice roads. And so it's just there. It really isn't about planning. It's about bringing in money. And if you don't bring enough money in 3 months, you're gone. In 6 months, you're gone. In 9 months, you're gone. In 12 months, you're gone. You must bring in this money or you're fired. That's how it works in those institutions. So it's refreshing to see someone with your background and a different perspective who's truly come a altruistic place of helping those. And I think it's refreshing. And so I'm actually, as we're going through this, you are going to be a resource for me as I have people reach out to me. I'm going to send them your way to get some coaching. And so I'm actually happy about this relationship that we're building right now. I know that Matt Holleran, who's been on my podcast, has Matt been on your podcast?
No, I've been on Matt's. I'm sorry. I've been on Matt's show.
You've been on Matt's? Well, I had Matt on mine and he's for the listeners. So Matt is a Navy veteran and he started his own podcast and I got into podcasting through Matt. He helps veterans and other financial professionals have financial podcasts. So he has a great perspective and he actually, something amazing about giving back and help. He had, how many boys was it, Giselle? He had at risk youth boys. He had 6 or 8 at one time. Or was it more than that?
Ooh,
in his home?
I think so.
Talk about an amazing dude that's giving back and helping people. His community was married and had kids and brought in all these high school age at risk boys and had to lock his bedroom and lock valuables and all that, but he helped and he did that. So that's a heck of a tangent, but giving back and providing services, I think is huge to the veteran community or the active duty community now as well. Cause if you start, have a good foundation while you're a veteran, while you're active duty and you transition to being a veteran, you already have the foundation to continue to excel and build upon. So when you're meeting with active duty, is there one or two areas you say are the most important for someone to consider when they're starting to address their own financial position and their own financial needs?
Well, I mean, debt and saving for the future, I think are most important. I mean, really it's spend less than you make and save. That's what it all comes down to. It's the heart of what we do and it helps you prepare for the unexpected in life. But I think that's most people that come to me, they're on one end or the other. They are, hey, I have debt. I need to figure this out. I need to start learning basic money concepts and I won't say healthy, but better habits with their money. And then on the other side is the people that, hey, I did that. I started being better with my money. I've built it up. Now I don't know what to do with all this money. I haven't been putting it into my TSP. I haven't been putting it in my 401k, those type of things. So it's really in between. There are some things, but predominantly those are the biggest groups.
Awesome. And let's dive into that. Let's actually provide some specific advice. So for the compliance aspect, as I am registered and licensed, all the good stuff, I just must say I'm not recommending anything. I'm not endorsing anything. This is not a blanket. I can't give blanket recommendations. I can't guarantee anything. So that being said, let's chat about debt. And there's different types of debt. There's student debt. There's mortgage debt and primarily credit card debt or car debt. So if I have credit card debt, I have car debt. Maybe if I'm military, I probably don't have student debt yet. That may be coming. And if I'm fortunate enough and I didn't live on base housing and I got a VA loan, I'd probably have mortgage debt. So between automotive debt, mortgage debt, and credit card debt, I've got debt. Is there good debt and bad debt? Or which debt should I try to tackle first, in your opinion, without being a blanket recommendation?
Actually, a lot of people come into the military with student loans debt. That's, most people have student loan debt, whether it be from a community college or because that's the thing that's pushed. Hey, you should get an education. And so a lot of people start doing that and they take out loans and then they realize school isn't for them, or it might not be for them right now. And now they have some debt. So they've come into the military. I know everybody has their own opinion, but I think debt is debt. You owe somebody else. It's not your money. You got to pay somebody back. And it's a stressor for most people. And oftentimes when I speak with people, the thing that makes logical sense financially, like, oh, wow, this one's got the highest interest rate. That's not the biggest stressor. You know, maybe something they've had a long time that they had before they got married, and it's a fight that they have with their spouse all the time because it's the debt they dragged in. It's not our debt, you know? So there's people, I call it their backpack full of BS. Everybody's got one. They're showing up to a relationship. They're showing up to work. Everybody's got one on their back, and that applies to especially their finances. So I say, you know, if you have debt, you have to have a plan to get out of it. And often it may not make sense to other people, but needs to make sense to you if you're in a relationship, to you and your spouse or your significant other. But if you don't know where to start, probably want to start with the stuff with the highest interest rate. You might have something that is maybe you owe $500, but has a low interest rate. You might want to just get that one done, get it off your back. So now you have less to manage. You freed up some cash flow to go after the other debt. So it really just depends on you. I recommend, you know, talking to somebody. If you're on active duty, you get free financial help on your installation at the financial services office. You know, if you're Air Force, Air Force Aid Society, Army Emergency Relief, that type of stuff, you can go in and a financial professional will help you create that budget and help you create a plan for getting out of debt for free.
I think that's great. I just want to dive in a little deeper on just two of the things you discussed, because I actually agree with you. So in theory or practice, it's normally recommended to pay off the highest interest rate first, because that's costing you the most. The higher interest rate means the more you're paying, the more that money is costing you to borrow. However, it feels good when you accomplish something. So you got something small and you can bang it out. I agree. Take care of the small thing first so you get a win. So you're positively reinforcing that activity, that behavior. Hey, paid this off. It's a little, didn't make a huge dent. No, but I did it. If I did that, I could do something else. So it's building confidence and it's building the habit. And then so if you take that small debt, take care of that, get rid of it, boom, you feel good. As you just said, it also frees up additional capital, because if you were paying the minimum on something at a higher rate, now you have more capital to really tackle that higher interest rate thing. And normally it's credit cards. Let's just say what it is. So if you have credit cards, and actually, especially last several years, they weren't quote as high, because we were in a zero rate environment. They were still charging between 10 and 15, I was seeing. I wasn't seeing the 19, 20, 22%, but I think it's coming back right now. I don't know if you're seeing that or not, because the Fed's raising rates. The credit cards, like, oh, we get to raise rates too, because that's how they make money. And so it's counterintuitive how the industry works, especially with credit debt. The people that can afford the least pay the most. The people that can afford the least pay the most. And that's a whole nother conversation about the system and whether it's right or wrong, but we live in the system. So maybe can't change the system, but be aware of the system. And so I will say humbly, if you can knock out credit card debt, I think that's always a good move. And then student loans tax deductible, and mortgage loans are also tax deductible too. The interest is tax deductible. So I consider that if you're going to have debt, that's the better kind of debt versus credit card debt, because you can't write it off in your taxes. So just not advice, not guidance, not a blanket recommendation. However, an idea, if you have higher interest rate debt, credit card debt, after you have some low things to take care of to get some wins in the win column, potentially try and tackle that higher interest rate debt just to get it down, because it's costing you the most. Then once you get that done, I'll ask you this. Let's play ping pong a little bit. So I have employees come to me. What's more important? Should I start saving for retirement or pay off my student loan debt?
Well, I mean, I think everything in money is personal. Like, each person is going to be different. The advice, they have different goals, they have different income, they have different debt, that type of thing. So student loans are saving for retirement. I would look at the interest rate. If it's a high interest rate, I would definitely be paying off my student loans. You're going to lose money in the spread, the interest that you're paying versus the interest that you're earning. So I would really be looking at that before I would make the decision on the way to do it. But then also part of that is getting started. That's stressful for some people that they haven't even started. So yeah, it might be losing a little bit of money, but it's your mindset. It's, you can sleep better at night, and all of this with money, you have to be able to sleep at night. So I always say the one thing that you think of that puts a pit in your stomach is the thing that you should be handling first, you know? And so if it puts a pit in your stomach that you haven't saved for retirement, you need to get all over that. If, you know, your debt, if it's the lowest one, so measly, that's bothering you, that's the one you need to handle. If it's, you know, not the huge amount, then yeah, let's take care of the one that's bothering you the most, and you'll eventually get to the other one. But, you know, your financial decisions don't need to necessarily make sense to other people. It's not really any of their business how you're going to go about getting your house in order. To me, you know, it's like what works best for you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if someone comes, especially depending, everything's custom, right? It's that unique prescription. You're the doctor. There's no general advice. However, if someone comes to you and they've got those two big things, should I start saving for retirement and paying off debt? Why not do a little bit of both? Right? Because you got compounding. The younger you are, you can compound, right? So if you can start saving something for retirement, there's all those charts out there that show the 20-year-old that does, you know, X amount versus the 30-year-old that does double what the 20-year-old does, still never catches the 20-year-old that's doing less because of compounding. And they have time on their side. And I think those charts are pretty compelling for the case of, again, not a recommendation, not endorsement, just saving for retirement. The younger you can, the sooner you can get something going, something. I don't know if it's $50, $25, do something every month, right? And then you got student debt. And once you get something every month towards retirement, then you can do something every month towards paying off your student debt. I think a lot of student debt's been pushed back with COVID. I know the government's helped a lot of individuals with student debt not have to pay that back, or, and that it could be a potential deferment of only 10 grand, but something's better than nothing. So I think that is very, very important. The main thing, as you just said, is to get something going, right? Start doing something and start forming that habit. And as your financial position changes, you get a raise. Do you go spend it all somewhere else, or do you give yourself a raise and save more for your retirement, or pay off more of your debt first? You know, having those decisions and being prudent and choose paying yourself or treating yourself like your biggest liability and your biggest asset at the same time. Take care of yourself. I think that's huge there. Is there one kind of faux pas or mindset issue or negative versus positive that you see or people come with to you when they're conversing with you? Is there something like, oh, not another one of these, or oh, why does someone think this way? Why does society teach that? Is there any recurring mindset issue or problem or falsity that you think is out there that could be corrected in a broader society?
Yes, I think seeking financial guidance is a hard thing for people. And often they're nervous to speak to me. They think I'm going to repeat something they say, or I'm going to judge how they spend their money. It's their money. They earned it. I'm not trying to tell them how to spend it. I'm trying to tell them how to be best with it to reach the goal that they just told me that they want to reach. So if you tell me you're trying to reach this goal and I see it's not aligning with how you're spending your money, it's not congruent, I'm going to point that out. But I think, you know, the relationship you have with money and worrying about what other people think, whether that be me as a financial coach, what other people think about your financial situation, is one of the biggest things people struggle with. And I wish more people knew about, is to say like, hey, actually, there's a lot of people that are way worse off than you. It blows my mind so many times when people come and like, oh, I only have, you know, $50,000 saved towards retirement. I'm like, that's, you know, you're in your 30s. That's way more than a lot of people that are 50 have. You know, you just never know what a person's situation is. So you shouldn't try to compare. You also don't know their debt, how much their spouse is earning. There's all these factors that go into it. And then also the help, like, hey, my job is to understand that. So it took me years to be able to answer your question in 30 seconds. Well, me being able to answer it that quickly could relieve a lot of pressure from you. It could give you something to cope, or a resource or a tool. Or let you know, hey, that's actually not a problem, or that's a quick fix. We'll knock that out right now. So I think people's mindset and how they worry about what others think is an issue.
I think that's huge. And one thing I will share, I find when I meet with employees of companies to discuss 401ks, everyone knows what they should be doing. They know they should be saving. They know it's important to save. However, they live today. And I feel pain today, financial pain today. And my money's going to go where I can alleviate that pain, or where I feel I'm alleviating that pain first, right? When you're in pain, you're going to do whatever it takes to alleviate that pain. And I have employees reach out to me all the time, and these people are higher up than the organization. Brett, I know everything you said, right? I know what I should be doing. And I'm like, let me guess, you're the ostrich putting your head in the sand, and you don't want to, because you don't want to face reality. And there's a lot of that. And like, yep, I'm just going to stick my head in the sand and not think about the future. I'm here today. And they know, and they admit it. And it drives me crazy, but that's human nature, because people sometimes feel I should be further ahead. I should have more saved up. I shouldn't be renting. I should be owning a home. I should have this debt paid off. I should not be where I am. And rather than have the difficult conversation with yourself and look in the mirror yourself, okay, I made some poor decisions. Maybe I wasn't educated, or this happened. You could be a victim, whatever, but you are where you are today financially. You can't do anything about what happened to you in the past, or your decisions, your actions in the past, other than learn from them and then look in the mirror, look yourself and say, hey, today's going to be different. I'm going to do something different today. That's the hardest step, I think, for anyone, because what? It's change. Everyone hates change. Everyone knows what they should be doing. I should be saving 10%. I should be doing Roth. I should do this. I should do that. But let me take care of this first, then I'll change. Let me take care of this, and I'll do that next year. I'll do that next month. I'll do it later. And it never comes back to it. So just like right now, it's January, and all the gyms are saying, hey, New Year's resolution, get in shape. You're going to eat better. You're going to do more. And this is Giselle's world, right? Because she coaches people all the time. And most of the gyms have a 90-day sprint or a 60-day sprint. Well, why do they do that? Because they get you in the gym 3-4 times a week for 60 days, 90 days. You're then what? Creating a habit. And so if you have that habit of working out 6 days or 90 days, are you going to stop on the 91st day? Probably not, because you got results. You feel good. You got through the initial pain and the hurt, and now you feel good and you're seeing results, and you want to keep that going. I think the exact same thing applies for financial security and wealth and financial decisions. You're in a habit. You somehow got to where you are because of habits you have made about money, and having the moral fortitude to look yourself in the mirror and say, maybe my decisions haven't been the best. Maybe I can make better ones. Telling yourself that's one thing, and then actually stopping and saying, today I'm going to pick one little thing. I'm going to make a change. And have that one small baby step change. I hate to say, what was that movie? What About Bob? Baby Steps, or that book from What About Bob? Baby Steps with Bill Murray. But it's so true. One change, one small step. All right. That's the key to a new financial positive habit. And then you get that. Okay. I got this one. Then I can do another. Whatever that second step is, and just have that change. I think for me, what I see with people, myself included, it's hard for me sometimes too. And I'm in the world. I'm in the space, right? You'd be amazed at how many financial advisors are financial wrecks out there. I could tell you some peers and friends, and they go through divorces, have challenges too, and they're impacted. It's not always their fault, so to speak. But that first step, I think, is the biggest issue, and having someone look themselves in the mirror, hold themselves accountable, because no one can hold themselves accountable. You must make that choice. No one can do it for you to start doing something different. That's what I see. What do you see? What are your thoughts about that? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Am I crazy? And you can tell me all the above.
With habits?
Sure. Just the thought of someone who maybe is in a financial challenging situation and should make a change. They know they should make a change, but they have to choose and actually implement the action. Knowing what you should do and doing it's two different things. Is that the hardest part for anyone financially, is knowing what they should do and taking that first step towards change?
Yes, I think change is difficult for everyone, whether that be, you know, money or anything in life. It's difficult when you don't know what's going to happen. The fear of the unknown gets people. So I think it's important to remember that whatever situation you're in, if anything, I mean, not even money, that it's not forever. It's for right now. Like, you just got to get through, and things are going to get better. And there is this point where you do have to do something different if you want a different result. If you want to keep going the way you're going, then keep at it. But if you want something different, you have to take an action of some sort. And sometimes that is difficult, and doing something small, I completely agree, it will have the greatest impact. Small things will add up into something huge. and doing things like put it in your calendar. I'm a real big fan of the Pompadour method. Like that's, you could do anything, clean your house for 25 minutes. You can work out for 25 minutes. You can meditate for 25 minutes. You can, you know, meal plan for 25 minutes. You could budget for 25 minutes and then take a break and then do it again. Like just doing things in smaller spurts, I think is also helpful to building a habit and also getting over that hump of change. Well, it's only 25 minutes or even 10 minutes. Something makes a difference. So just getting started and not overthinking it. That's the biggest thing for people too, is, well, you can't think about the outcome like, oh, will I ever get out of debt? Will I ever have enough saved for retirement? Will I ever have, you know, a new car or whatever it is? You can't think that way. You have to think about the step in front of you. Like, okay, I can set up automatic payments to my retirement plan. That could be the first step. So thinking about the action that you can take, you can't control the result. You can't control other people's action, but what can you do today to move the needle?
I think that's perfect. And I think you're 100% correct. And I 100% agree. So thank you for sharing that. So Lacey, if there anyone would like your coaching, how do they reach you again?
You can reach me, LaceyLangford.com. I have in there how to work with me, and I have a set amount of coaching sessions in my schedule, and that's the best way. You can download the show anywhere podcasts are found. That's also a great way. If you ever have questions, I take those on the podcast. But
oh, you have live calls? You have live callers? People call in your podcast, like live?
No, not live, but people can submit questions, and I answer them on the
show.
That'd
be cool. We should do it. You know what? This inside baseball talk. I'd be willing to do this again with you on LinkedIn Live and just see what people come in, see what questions they come in. I think we're working towards a live webinar on LinkedIn. So I'd love to have you on board. If you want to run and gun with me, I welcome the company and the guidance and the mentorship from you, Lacey, because you've got a lot more experience than me as a coach. That's completely different. My world's different than yours, but I think our worlds have the same end goal and they're aligned. And so I truly enjoy having you on the podcast today. So if someone wants to reach me, Giselle, how do they find us?
You can reach Brett@swe90.com. You can also check out our website, swe90.com. It'll have all of our services and what we do for veteran business owners, as well as our podcast.
Awesome. And Lacey, what's the name of your podcast one more time?
The Military Money Show.
Awesome. The Military Money Show. Everyone check it out. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass podcast. Don't forget to click the follow button to become notified when new episodes become available. Securities offered through IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through IFP Investors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, a registered investment advisor. IFP and Strategic Wealth Endeavor INC are not affiliated. The views expressed are that of the host and are for informational purposes only, and in no event should be construed as an offer to buy or sell securities. Opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not take into account the particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs of individual investors. Neither IFP Investors LLC, IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, nor their affiliates offer tax or legal advice. Interested parties are strongly encouraged to seek advice from qualified tax and/or legal experts regarding the best options for your particular circumstances. The information given herein is taken from sources that IFP Advisors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners.